Let's get down to business, taking a look at Wall Street. Dow Jones Industrial Average up 183 at 16,336. The S&P 500 up 9 at 1,912. NASDAQ Composite down 12 at 4,504. Yield on the 10-year Treasury up 2 basis points at 1.88%. Oil up 241 at $32.29 per barrel. That's an 8% gain. Gold up $13.20 at $1,143.20 per ounce. Activity in the services sector slowed to a near 2-year low in January. The Institute for Supply Management, the ISM, said its index of non-manufacturing activity fell to 53.5 last month, lowest level since February 2014, from 55.8 in December. Yeah, any reading above 50 indicates expansion in the service sector. Service industries reported growth in new orders continued to slow, with export orders contracting last month. Private sector employment gains increased in January, but at a slower pace than in the prior month. Employers added 205,000 jobs in January, according to Automatic Data Processing. ADP tweaked December's gain to 267,000. That's up 10,000 from the prior month. The ADP report is used as an early predictor of the government's monthly jobs report due out Friday morning. The Fed is adding a new twist to its severely adverse scenario in this year's stress test, asking the banks how they would handle a prolonged period of rates below zero. 90-day bill rates slipped below zero a number of times over the past few years, but never stayed there for long. Negative rates, of course, are breaking out all over Europe, and the Bank of Japan last week introduced negative deposit rates as part of its latest attempt to spur the economy into faster growth. Japan could introduce even more stimulus. Speaking this morning, Bank of Japan Governor Haruhiko Kuroda said last week's decision to introduce negative interest rates was the most powerful monetary policy framework in the history of modern central banking. Kuroda also noted that if the policy wasn't enough to jumpstart the economy, new tools could always be invented. Minutes released by the Bank of Japan overnight showed an intense debate by board members over Friday's sub-zero measures. The Nikkei index today down 3.2%. Kim China is offering to buy Switzerland's Syngenta. It's a deal worth more than $43 billion, which would be the largest ever international takeover by a Chinese company. Syngenta's board has recommended the deal to shareholders. It's 480 francs per share, about a 20% premium based on yesterday's closing price. If completed, the transaction would help Kim China transform into the world's biggest supplier of pesticides and agrochemicals and a major supplier of seeds. China, the world's largest agricultural market, is looking to secure food supply for its population. Only around 10% of Chinese farmland is considered efficient. Years of intensive farming combined with overuse of chemicals has degraded the land and poisoned water supplies, leaving China vulnerable to crop shortages. Syngenta's portfolio of chemicals and patent-protected seeds fits into Beijing's plans to modernize agriculture over the next 5 years. Home Depot is hiring more than 80,000 workers nationwide for its busy spring season, same level as in recent years. The retailer estimates that more than half the temporary workers stay on for permanent employment. The part-time and full-time jobs include sales, operations, cashier positions across all departments and stores, as well as jobs at distribution centers. Home improvement giant Lowe's buying smaller Canadian counterpart Rona in a $2.3 billion deal. Lowe's expected to pay cash and acquire all issued and outstanding common shares of Rona for about $24 Canadian dollars per share. The estimated $2.3 billion transaction represents a premium of 104% Rona's closing share price yesterday. General Motors posted a record net profit of $9.7 billion last year, more than double GM's 2014 earnings, and aided by a $3.9 billion fourth quarter accounting gain because prospects for turning a profit in Europe are considered good. The company expects to break even there this year. Excluding special items, GM earned $5.02 per share for the year, beating Wall Street estimates of $4.82 per share. Profits fueled by strong SUV and truck sales largely in North America. Earnings were so strong that most of GM's 49,600 hourly workers will get $11,000 profit-sharing checks on February 26th. Toyota has issued an official statement that Scion will be killed off and folded into the Toyota brand. As of August, Scion models will be sold as Toyotas. Toyota didn't specify how the company will support the 1,004 dealers selling Scion vehicles. Resolving franchise agreements with dealers of discontinued brands can be quite costly. Sandeep Mathrani, CEO of General Growth Properties, was asked on an earnings call about mall traffic over the holiday season. He answered that traffic was up and attributed some of the increase to the number of items consumers buy online and then return to brick-and-mortar stores. And then he added, in this case in point, you've got Amazon opening bricks-and-mortar bookstores, and their goal is to open, as I understand, 300 to 400 bookstores. Apparently nobody told Amazon. They say they don't comment on rumors. Merck, second largest U.S. drug maker behind Pfizer, forecasting full-year earnings of $3.60 to $3.75 per share, well below average estimates. Fourth quarter revenue fell 3% to $10.2 billion. That was below analyst expectations of $10.3 billion. Sales would have risen 4% if not for the stronger dollar. Net income fell to $976 million from $7.3 billion. Merck reported disappointing fourth-quarter sales of its Januvia diabetes treatment and its Remicade arthritis drug. British-based drug maker GlaxoSmithKline posted a loss of $616 million for the fourth quarter of 2015. Comcast posting better-than-expected fourth-quarter revenue and added the most video customers in any quarter in the past 8 years. Just 10 days after Moody's put over $500 billion in energy debt on review for downgrade, S&P decided it wanted to be the first one out of the gate with actual cuts. Companies that saw their ratings cut by one notch: Chevron, Apache, Continental Resources, Devon Energy, EOG Resources, Hess, Hunt Oil, Marathon Oil, Murphy Oil, and Southwestern Energy. Oil futures were trading below $30 a barrel again today, but prices took a positive turn in the morning after two steep days of declines. Looking to return to the international capital markets, Argentina has agreed to pay $1.3 billion to a group of Italian investors whose bonds the country defaulted on in 2001. This marks the first time Argentina has reached an accord with holdout creditors. The deal sets a tough precedent for parallel negotiations taking place in New York between Argentina and another group of holdouts led by billionaire Paul Singer's Elliott Management, who are seeking to be paid around $3.50 on the dollar, or a total of around $9 billion. The European Union and the United States have reached a deal over transatlantic data sharing that would potentially extinguish the risk of costly litigation against companies by consumers worried about their privacy. The two sides have been trying to forge an agreement since October, when Europe's top court struck down the previous pact in existence since 2000, known as the Safe Harbor Agreement. They're still looking for some more information. Separately, the EU and U.S. are trying to bring the Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership to a close by the summer. Some of the biggest names on Wall Street have piled into one trade, shorting the Chinese yuan. This despite the fact that the Chinese government has threatened to punish anyone trying to pull the currency down. And these aren't empty threats either. China has used its reserves to buy yuan and squeeze short sellers out of their positions. The country has $3 trillion in foreign exchange reserves to do this. And yet no one seems to be afraid, especially guys with huge funds like Pershing Square's Bill Ackman and Hayman Capital's Kyle Bass, who have admitted to being on the short side. Barclays thinks the country will, later this week, announce the largest single-month drop in its reserves in modern history. And this was surely a painful day for yuan shorts. The dollar had its biggest decline in 7 years, and the drop started right after the ISM report on the service sector. The dollar's pullback this week has reversed all the yen's decline against the greenback on Friday, when the Bank of Japan introduced negative interest rates. Currency traders are catching up to the bond market, where 10-year yields sank to the lowest in a year yesterday, while futures are sending the strongest signal yet that traders expect the Fed to stand pat for the remainder of the year. The January employment report on Friday may determine whether the dollar sell-off will continue. The jobs report will probably show the economy created fewer than 200,000 jobs for the first time since September. And as the dollar dropped, oil prices jumped higher, in part because oil is priced in dollars, and a weaker dollar means more dollars to buy the same amount of oil. The markets shrugged off government data showing U.S. crude and gasoline inventories rose to record levels last week. Crude soared 7.8 million barrels higher, topping analysts' expectations for about 4.8 million barrels. Imports jumped, refiners trimmed throughput. So there's still a glut of oil. Total U.S. supplies stood at 503 million barrels a day for the week ending January 29th. EIA says that's near levels not seen for this time of year in at least the last 80 years. But now, when the price moves, it squeezes the short positions, and that's why we see so much volatility in oil prices, to the tune of 8% in one session. It's just plain old gambling, and that is a very volatile game. And as oil moves, it's been dragging stocks with it. Today, ExxonMobil and Chevron, the big gainers in the Dow Industrials, even as the NASDAQ lost 12. We invite you to follow along at moneyradio.com, live streaming and archived audio. The daily blog is eatthebankers.com. Text audio, author interviews, a free podcast, and much more at eatthebankers.com.